Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org and stream podcasts there as well. Podcasts of prior shows. You go to the tab for local programming, look for Your Financial Choices, and peruse the topics available and listen at your leisure. Today is November 28, 2018. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 25,366, the NASDAQ at 7,291, and the S&P at 2,743. Markets rallying on word from the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell that interest rates are close to neutral, which could indicate that they may not raise rates at the level or number that they thought they were going to. So bank stocks liked that, and the market liked it. So that was good news after several weeks of volatility and down markets, downward trends. Next week, I'm going to have Tim Roof and Connor Darrell from Valley National come on and talk about the markets, looking back, what can we expect, and the economy. So tune in for that next week as well. Our topic tonight is odds and ends in financial planning. What am I talking about that? Well, I just thought it would be good to do a show on different kind of little tidbits that come up in financial planning. So I'll let you know what that is going to be in a minute. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C's in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. First, let me also say happy Thanksgiving to everyone. We weren't here last week because we take that day off to be with family. So I hope everyone had a happy Thanksgiving. The week before, we talked about Social Security. I'm going to touch on a couple things about Social Security as I talk about some of these odds and ends tonight. So what are we doing? Well, we get a variety of questions and cover a number of topics relating to financial planning, to decisions in your financial planning, your choices. So I just thought it would be interesting to talk about a few things that come up in financial planning, but not regularly. These aren't necessarily things that come up at the top, you know, frequently. People will talk about, you know, tax planning or asset allocation in your investments or putting money into a retirement account. But I'm going to try to touch on a few things that may not, you know, come on the radar all the time. And these are things that might slip by you if you're not aware or if you're not working with a planner, or sometimes even if you're working with a planner, they may not have it on their radar either. So I want to touch on, number one, before year end, talking about annualizing your W-2 income and withholding and what that means, talking about making sure you have your taxes covered if you're self-employed, and some things to think about for that this year. Pension elections, pension maximization. I had someone call, I think, a few weeks ago about a pension election, so I thought, oh, I'll touch on that a little bit. Something called NUA, net unrealized appreciation. Social Security claiming strategies and withholdings. Again, I talked about Social Security a couple of weeks ago, but I just want to alert people to something very important coming up in 2019 and withholdings. A lot of people don't know you can have withholdings on Social Security. Touch on Medicare, Medicare premiums in particular, and something called IRMA, the income-related monthly adjustment amount. Some little tidbits you might not know on that. Filing for Medicare and what happens if you already have insurance. Using up your tax bracket. What do you have to pay attention to if you're doing tax planning and trying to put some extra income on your return? A little bit about 401k contributions and see how much other time I have to talk about a few of the other items I had on my list. So I'm just going to start throwing them out there and we'll see how much I can get covered. So my little caution as we're reaching toward the end of the year is sometimes people think they have their taxes all figured out, their employer's withholding, and they say, oh, well, my employer's withholding, they withhold the right amount, and they don't realize it. It doesn't exactly work like that. Your employer withholds from your pay based on your pay and the withholding tables for the filing status that you've elected on your W-4. What they do not know about is if you have other income on your return, perhaps investment income, capital gains, interest, dividends. Maybe you have Social Security on your tax return. Maybe a spouse is collecting Social Security. You're still working. Maybe they get a pension. You have to make sure that the withholdings are going to cover whatever the tax obligation would be, or if you're going to make quarterly estimated payments too. The little caution for 2018 is that they change the withholding tables in the first quarter, mid-year. So the withholdings were at a much higher rate at the beginning of the year, and then they lowered like February, March, whenever your employer started using the new withholding tables. So if they have withheld less and you are used to those withholdings covering some of that other income you have, not just your wages, but covering some of that other income, like the investment income, you might not have enough withholdings to cover your tax due. So you just want to kind of eyeball that. And generally what we're looking at are pay stubs, the most recent pay stubs for people. And then we annualize it through the end of the year. We say, okay, are you getting any bonuses? Did you change your 401k contributions? Is this a good year-to-date pay stub? And then we take the current amount, annualize it, making sure it looks like we've got the right amount, throw it into the tax software to make sure that we have enough withholdings and or that the quarterly estimates along with the withholdings cover you. As it's getting so close to the end of the year, if you weren't properly withheld, it might not matter as long as you have what's called a safe harbor. So the IRS is a pay-as-you-go system. They want you to pay the taxes you owe as you go along the year, but they recognize that not everybody knows what the taxes will be. So they give us other safe harbors where they're not going to charge us a penalty for underpaying. So you only have penalties and interest if you underpay. What do they consider a safe harbor where they're not going to penalize you if you underpay? Safe harbor is you pay in at least as much as you owed in the prior year within certain thresholds. Pay in as much as you owed in the prior year. If you owe less than $1,000 in the current year, or if you pay in 90% of the current year. So there are some safe harbors, so you just want to be aware of that. All right, we're seeing some big differences for some people, not for everybody, but some people. So you just want to be careful of that. My caution for self-employed people is it could actually go the other direction. You might have done estimated tax payments based on your prior year income, which would have been higher, and you might not have factored in the new tax rates for 2018. And also self-employed people, depending on what kind of business you have and what kind of income you have, you may be entitled to a 20% income adjustment on your tax return, not for your self-employment tax, but a literally an income deduction called a qualified business income deduction up to 20% of your business income. Might not be as high as that, might depends on how much other income you have. There's certain calculations you have to look at, but if you're paying quarterly payments, you might have paid in more. if you're a little tight on money, it might be good to know, hey, maybe you don't have to make that fourth quarter payment. So you want to watch for that. So it's all about doing some little, you know, tax projections before year end, just so there's no surprises in April, and that if you do end up owing a lot more in April, you're ready for it. Or if you really would have a big refund if you made a quarterly estimated payment and you don't really have the money to do it, well, if you're going to have a big refund, then you don't need to do that. So that's kind of just something to pay attention to. When we come back from our first break, I'm going to talk a little bit briefly about pension elections and some of the decision making that you want to do as you're trying to make a decision on that. And we'll talk more about odds and ends in financial planning. If you have questions, we are live tonight. You can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. And the number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR news headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m., here on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We are talking about odds and ends in financial planning. Moving to pension elections, not that many people have pensions anymore, but there are still some people who have them, which is why I'm calling it an odd and odds and ends, because, you know, people don't talk about it as often when we don't have as many people eligible for pensions. But I imagine there still are plenty of people who will be retiring from some of our local corporations who had in the past provided those pensions, especially to the long-term employees, not so much the new folks, but the people who might be retiring now. You may be given the opportunity to choose to have a monthly pension or to take a lump sum distribution. So that is one part of a pension election. Another pension election may involve what kind of benefit you choose, whether it's a single life benefit or a benefit that would be available to a surviving spouse. So first, let's talk about a pension election when you're evaluating whether to take a monthly pension versus a lump sum that is being offered to you. So some companies had provided pensions. They just want to get it off their books. So they give folks an opportunity to take a lump sum. Some companies offer it, some companies don't. So if you're offered it, you need to go through an analysis to determine if it makes sense for you to take the monthly amount or opt for the lump sum. Basically, some of the items you're going to want to review in that analysis and making that decision, and these little comments tonight don't preclude you or assume that you should figure this out by yourself. I think it's really, really an important decision that should be evaluated with a financial planner or your CPA, CFP, for your particular circumstances. But why I want to talk about it tonight is because if you're not aware of some of the considerations you need to, some of the decisions you need to consider, I think you're at a disadvantage. So what do you want to consider? You want to know who's the recipient, what is their age, what is their life expectancy per the table, what would be their life expectancy based on, you know, family history and their personal health. What about the name or the age and life expectancy of a spouse, if there's a spouse? What kind of income needs you have for routine living? What kind of future expenditures you might have to pay for, what kind of goals you have for those future expenditures, and when would you have them, concern for financial needs of your heirs, do you want to avoid investment risk, income tax exposure, danger of higher inflation, danger of money remaining in the hands of the former employer. So when you're looking at each of these kind of topics in your decision making, you want to assign a certain level of importance to each of those. And as you go through that exercise, it'll help lead you to what might be the more appropriate question or answer for your particular circumstances. All right, so that's a pension election analysis if you have the opportunity to take a pension versus a lump sum. Now, there is also, before you retire and make an irrevocable election on a pension that you're not given the lump sum option for, but that you have to still make an option if you have a surviving spouse and or other heirs, there are pension elections that might include a single life option, where if you just take a monthly pension over your lifetime, it generally is giving you the highest benefit. But that if you provide for a survivor, you take a haircut on that monthly pension. So generally what we look at is if there is a spouse, we're generally seeing a single life joint with 100% survivor option, meaning if I die and I choose this joint and 100% survivor benefit, if my pension is $2,000 a month and I die and I choose this pension, my spouse would get $2,000. Well, the single life might have been $2,500. So you see there's a bit of a haircut. It could, and it could be anything in between. I'm just making these numbers up. Sometimes you say, well, my survivor isn't going to need as much income because they're probably going to be older and they might not spend as much because they're single now. So maybe I'll only provide a 50% survivor benefit. So you could take maybe a little bit less of a haircut. So if single life, and I'm making these numbers up, $2,500, maybe the 100% survivor is $2,000, but the 50% survivor is $2,250. So it's not as much of a haircut, but then my survivor would only get half of that, $1,125. All right, there's sometimes 75% survivor, so there's any mix of those. Generally, what you want to do is ask for an illustration from your HR department to please provide an illustration of all of the options available to you. And it could be, you know, if you're thinking about retiring today or maybe in 2 years or 5 years, you could say, hey, could you please run an analysis for me at age 60, 62, and 65? Sometimes those tools are available to you on the website of the employer or the provider, you know, managing the administrator, managing the pension plan. All right, so you want to ask for those illustrations. Certain pension plans might also offer you something with a guaranteed element. So, for example, teachers, they have PSERS, the Pennsylvania State Employee Retirement System. And that could include the present value of your pension. Let's pretend you're going to get X amount of dollars over your life expectancy, but to the value of that future stream of money today might be worth $260,000. If I chose the single life, maybe that benefit would be the highest, but I think, geez, if I die the next day and I chose that single life option, my whole value of that pension that I work so hard to accrue and earn is gone. If I choose a single life, it's gone. So there's an option that they have that will be like a guaranteed benefit that might say, if the present value of that future stream of income is worth $250,000 and my payment is $2,500 a month, well, if I live a month and I got my $2,500 and I chose this guaranteed piece, it would be $250,000 less the $2,500, which would be guaranteed to my heirs. So I might not have a spouse, but I might have children who might, you know, benefit from that. So that could be an election you could choose. So you just want to make sure you understand before you make any kind of irrevocable election that you get an illustration of all of your options. Okay, so that's pension election options. I did have a call come in. Marie from Allentown said, what does it mean when you say you'll take a haircut? So when in my pension example, if the single life option is $2,500 and I die tomorrow, that the person who is paying the pension, they really won big time. They're setting this pension based on my life expectancy. So if I'm going to take $2,500 and I die, that works out really well for them. But if I say, hey, pension people, I'm afraid I'm going to lose all this benefit. So I want to provide a benefit for my survivor. I'm married. I want to provide a benefit for my spouse. Well, they're not going to pay me $2,500 a month because now they have to, reserve for a survivor benefit. Because generally, too, when you have a married couple, the life expectancy is longer. So they actually will take a little haircut, meaning if my single life benefit was $2,500 and I want to provide a survivor benefit to my spouse, if it's 100% survivor benefit, my haircut's going to be pretty big. Instead of a $2,500 a month pension, I might only get a $2,000 a month pension. But if I say, hey, I don't need 100% survivor benefit, maybe only a 50% survivor benefit, well, then they're not going to give me as big of a haircut. Maybe my my lifetime benefit would only be $2,250. So I'm taking a little bit of a reduction in my pension to kind of guarantee a benefit to a survivor. And so the haircut is there's a cost to that, all right? When I come back, Marie, I'm going to talk about something called pension maximization, which might help bridge the gap on this little conversation. And Marie, I don't know if it was a different Marie. I had two Maries call. I had another question, and I'll answer that when I come back from the next break, too. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. The phone number, if you'd like to call in and ask a question, you can talk live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air with me, you can talk to Lori C, and she'll write the question down, and she will bring it into me. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I want to follow back up to Marie's question when I talked about taking a haircut on a pension. Some people might say, well, I don't want to take a haircut. I really need that single life, you know, value. But if you have a survivor, what's going to happen to your survivor? There is something called a technique called pension maximization. Frankly, in many, many years, I have not seen this work for practically any cases I've worked on. Just recently, I saw where it worked for someone. And what it is let's pretend the single life benefit is $2,500 and the survivor would not have enough money to live on if the pensioner died. So the present value of the pension, the $2,500 a month pension, let's pretend it's $250,000, that future stream of income. We need it to live on. And if my pensioner selected the single life, we would be out of, you know, luck on $250,000 present value of that pension. Let's pretend that's what we would need, $250,000. Well, if the joint survivor benefit would cost me $200, meaning if I was going to get $2,500 and I'm only going to get $2,300, cost me $200, $200 less in my pay. If I could buy life insurance with that difference for my survivor, so I'm at the pensioner's life, if I could buy $250,000 of life insurance for less than the haircut I would take, then it might be worth doing that. It's called pension maximization. I'm not going to go into all the calculations because there's enough I want to talk about. But you could buy life insurance to replace the pension that would be lost if the pensioner died. If the pensioner doesn't die, then you're ahead of the game. If they live beyond their life expectancy, you're ahead of the game, et cetera, et cetera. So that's called pension maximization. Now, Marie called and she asked, a small business owner, and has a part-time job. It's a limited-term position that's about to run out. How will a small business income factor into unemployment? The part-time job will start up again next year, so the unemployment will be temporary. Unemployment cannot answer this question. Well, I'm not an unemployment expert, Marie, but what I would say is with self-employed people and unemployment, you have to be careful. So unemployment is based on, from what I recall, unemployment is based on your, used to be like your prior 2 years work history. So even if you started with a new employer, you know, last month and lost your job, they go back even to the former employer for the work history. And they do a calculation based on your earnings from, you know, X number of years, okay? Whether it's 2 years or 3 years, I don't recall off the top of my head. So they're looking at your W-2 income from your employer because your employer has paid in unemployment. You're paying in unemployment insurance through payroll now. In the old days, I don't think we did. So the unemployment is paid through that. When you're self-employed, you're not paying the unemployment insurance. So I've never had anyone ask me this question, but I don't think it would come into play in your unemployment earnings because you're not paying into unemployment for that income. My caution I want to give you is I've seen where people will be working, lose their job, file for unemployment, and then go get a self-employed job. If you now go into business for yourself, you may be deemed not to be unemployed anymore. So that's where I see people get into trouble. And I'm going to have to do a show on unemployment now, Marie. So thank you for bringing this up because I haven't had to talk about unemployment in a while. But it's for people who are working, lose their jobs, and then say, oh, well, I need to make something, so I'm going to go get a self-employed job. I'm going to start consulting or something. That could impact any unemployment that you had been eligible for because now they'll deem you to be working and not unemployed. And so back to Marie's question, I don't believe your self-employment income will factor into your unemployment calculation, but I'll have to verify that, but I wouldn't think it would because you're not paying unemployment insurance when you're self-employed. All right. Albert called in. Let me see. Albert from Akunji called in. He said his father-in-law retired for 10 years from the union. The government's going to take over now because the pension plan will become an installment because enrollment is down. There's a 30% cut in benefits. How to take this into consideration moving forward as far as taxes, et cetera. So, Albert, I think what you're saying is your father had a pension. Something happened. The PGBC, the Pension Guarantee Benefit Corporation, might have had to take it over. And now there's not enough pension monies to fully pay the pension amounts to the people receiving it. So he is getting a cut in benefits. What's going to happen for tax reasons? He'll just have less income on his tax return. So when we talk about tax considerations, he's just going to have less income on his tax return. So the taxes will go down for that. I'm not sure how it would impact him for cash flow planning. If he has to make up that income, then his taxes could be affected if he's having to pull money from, you know, IRAs or retirement accounts and things like that. If the pension, depending on how big the pension was, if he's also collecting Social Security and now the pension benefit's coming down, depending on how big that pension was, maybe his Social Security taxable benefits will go down too because Social Security's taxed based on how much other income you have on your return. So that could be impacted too. If it's for 2019, you just want to make sure that you kind of do the projections and plan that out. All right. So, Albert, I hope that answered your question. If we weren't clear enough, you're welcome to give us a call back or email me through yourfinancialchoices.com. All right, folks. Love talking about odds and ends and getting great ideas from our listeners. So I'll make sure that I include some topic on unemployment probably in the new year as well. So, Marie, thanks for calling in with that question. When we come back from this break, I'm going to move into just touching quickly on something called net unrealized appreciation for people who have employer stock in either from old 401ks, existing 401ks, or, you know, cash some employer stock out of a plan years ago. I'm going to talk about NUA, and then we'll move on to talking about Social Security and withholdings and things like that. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. It's 6:30. Your current temperature is 37. On Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 42. Thursday night, low around 29. Friday, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 40. Friday night, low around 32. Saturday, cloudy with a high near 47. Saturday night, low around 43. And Sunday, cloudy with a high near 60. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. I do want to mention, too, Lehigh Valley SCORE is an organization, nonprofit organization that helps businesses or people who are starting a business, getting into a business, transitioning a business, since we were talking a little bit about businesses tonight. And they have different workshops. They have a website. I forgot what the website is, lehighvalleyscore.org, maybe. And they'd like us to kind of mention some of the workshops they have coming up from time to time. And they do have one on Saturday, December 1st from 9:30 to 12. And it's called Starting a Business A to Z. Don't let 2018 end without keeping that New Year's resolution you made 12 months ago. Start that business before 2019. So they're going to talk about that, people starting up a business. And they have information on their website as well. You can probably just Google Lehigh Valley SCORE. Let's get back to our odds and ends in financial planning. We talked about annualizing your W-2 income, your withholdings, making sure you're covered either through withholdings or estimated tax payments, or that you haven't like tremendously overpaid either. We've talked about a little bit about pension elections, whether it's a lump sum versus a monthly pension or a survivor pension options, whether it's for a spouse or maybe your surviving heirs where you want more of like a guaranteed kind of a benefit. And we talked about pension maximization briefly. I want to mention something else on odds and ends that doesn't come up as often, something called net unrealized appreciation. We have a couple corporations in our Lehigh Valley, Air Products, PPL, that for years have put employer stock into the retirement plans for their employees with in the way of a match. And employees accumulate this employer stock over the years. Some employees diversify out of it in their retirement plans, and some don't. Some hold on to it forever. One of the responsibilities your employer has is to keep track of the cost basis of that employer stock as they're putting it into the plan. Imagine someone's worked at one of these companies for 30 years. Imagine what the cost basis might be for company stock in either your 401k or employer stock ownership plan if they started putting it in 30 years ago when you worked there and you never diversified out of it. Some people diversify out of it altogether, some maybe a little bit here and there. In the end, we sometimes have retirees coming out of these positions with huge amounts of employer stock in their retirement accounts. Before you roll that over to an IRA, you need to ask the employer, HR, the custodian, whoever is holding the funds, what the cost basis is on that employer stock, because there is a special tax provision that is applicable to employer stock in a qualified plan, and it's called net unrealized appreciation treatment. What happens is you have the opportunity to be able to take out the employer stock out of that plan and only pay tax on the cost basis, such that you hold the shares now. The cost basis is the cost basis that you just paid tax on. And the appreciation is what is called the net unrealized appreciation. And at such time you sell that stock, the net unrealized appreciation gets long-term capital gains tax treatment. Long-term capital gains tax treatment on what is deemed to be the net unrealized appreciation. You do have to pay the tax on the cost basis. So if I have employer stock in a plan and the cost basis is $100,000 and the fair market value today is $100,000, I'm not going to take it out. That doesn't make any sense. But there are times where you might have cost basis of $20,000 and a fair market value of that stock of $150,000. Well, now you're talking $20,000, and I'm exaggerating, but $20,000 cost basis on $150,000 worth of value. I would love to pay tax on $20,000 and get $130,000 of net unrealized appreciation taxed at long-term capital gains tax rates. Once you roll it over, you can't do that. So this net unrealized appreciation is awesome. That now the issue is, you have to do it in a lump sum distribution. So you can't just typically take the stock out of the 401k if it's, you know, commingled with your other assets. You'd have to roll over the other amounts. You also want to be careful if you have any after-tax money in a 401k, any after-tax money you can roll to a Roth IRA because you already paid tax on it. You can roll it to a Roth IRA. You don't want to roll over any after-tax money into your rollover IRA. So net unrealized appreciation, great tax planning tool if it's available to you. You don't have to do the whole thing. Let's pretend you have a cost basis of $40,000 and you only really have the room on your tax return to tax 20. You can only take some of it. You don't have to take all the stock. You could roll over some of the stock if you want to, or sell it before you roll over the rest to an IRA. So just be aware of it, something people don't really pay attention to. If you were someone who did that many, many, many years ago and you're still sitting on that employer stock because you loved your employer, you love the stock, and you don't want to sell it, you got to look at diversification. Are you over-concentrated in it? And if you want to diversify out of it, you look for opportunities in your tax brackets in your retirement years as to whether or not maybe you could get that. Capital gains rates are 15%. But if you're in a 15% or lower tax bracket, which is now the 12% bracket or lower, you pay zero tax on the long-term gains to the extent you're in that lower bracket. So there are opportunities to get some of this net unrealized appreciation at maybe even 0%, depending on what your personal tax situation is. Let me move on to Social Security claiming. So just a little reminder about Social Security claiming. Anyone who was born in 1953, if you were 62 by December 31st of 2015, that means you were born in 1953, you have still a Social Security claiming strategy that's available to no others after this. And guess what? You're all going to be 66 in 2019. So this claiming strategy is only available to people who were 62 by December 31st of 2015, and you have to be full retirement age. So when you reach full retirement age, you have the option, if this applies to married couples. If you are full retirement age and you go to file for your Social Security, you can restrict your application to a spousal benefit. So let's say, I'm going to give an example, the husband, 67, he's already claiming his Social Security. Wife in 2019, turned 66, has not filed yet. you still have an opportunity to get what I call free money. You could restrict your application to your spousal benefit, collect on your husband's record because he is already collecting. So you can't file on a spouse's record unless they're already collecting. And you don't get this option unless you're full retirement age. So your full retirement age in 2019, you're 66, your spouse is already filing. You can file a restricted application to collect your spousal benefit and let your own benefit continue to grow at 8% premium. Why would you do this? You would do this if your benefit was higher and you have the opportunity to grow that benefit even more. If your own benefit is less than your spousal benefit, then you wouldn't do this. This is applicable when we have two working members of the couple. The husband and wife have both worked. Sometimes they both have really good records. This is a great strategy for that, to build up your own record. Women have generally longer life expectancies. You want to build up the highest benefit. Sometimes we do it the other way. So if the husband has the higher benefit and the wife also had a benefit, let's say the wife is entitled to, $1,800 a month, and the husband's entitled to $2,500 a month, and the wife's already filed. The husband's now 66. He can go file for his spousal benefit, get half the $1,800. He'd only get $900, but you said, oh, but his benefit was $2,500. Well, he can let his benefit grow at 8% a year to age 70. And then if something happens to him, the wife steps into the higher benefit. So when someone passes away, the surviving spouse steps into the higher benefit. So that's one way we can get higher benefits for surviving spouses as well. You kind of maximize the higher earner's pay or benefit. All right. Sounds a little complicated, but it's just, you know, basically it's, you kind of put a pause before you make a decision and do your research and your planning. So the odds and ends we're talking about tonight is kind of trying to raise awareness to things that you might not have in the forefront of your mind before you make any kind of irrevocable elections on whether it's pensions or Social Security. Do your homework and think, does this apply to me? Do I have an opportunity here? Basically, for anybody born after 1953, we don't really have these options. You just, when you go in and file, Social Security is going to pay you the higher of whichever benefit is available to you. If a spouse hasn't filed, then it's going to be your own benefit. Once they file, you could switch over to the higher spousal benefit if it's higher at that time, but they're going to pay you whichever is the higher benefit available to you at that time. I want to mention there's withholding that you can do on Social Security. Some people don't realize this. It seems, I don't know if Social Security ever even asked. There's a form W-4V, V as in Victor, voluntary withholding request for Social Security. And they just give you percentages. You can withhold 7%, 10%, 12%, or 22%. That is based on the 2018 changes in tax rates. It used to be different amounts. So the W-4V for 2018, you can withhold 7%, 10%, 12%, 22%, and they'll withhold tax on your Social Security payment. You may not have been aware of that. If you're someone who pays quarterly payments and you really are sick of it and you don't want to do it, you can set it to be done automatically through the voluntary withholding request for Social Security. You can Google that W-4V, download a page, print it off, fill it out, and mail it in or deliver it to your local Social Security office. Speaking of withholdings, once you file for Social Security and you become eligible for Medicare, they automatically start withholding your Medicare payments from your Social Security. If you're someone who has not filed for Social Security but you become age 65, you have to file for Medicare separately and write a check then. If you're not collecting Social Security, you have to sign up usually about 90 days in advance of your turning age 65 to let them know. But here's something that some people don't realize, is that if you have qualified coverage, I think that's the term they use, If you have qualified coverage, you do not have to sign up for Medicare Part B. If you have qualified coverage and you can demonstrate that you have that qualified coverage, perhaps your spouse is still working. Many people are working to age 70. You have health insurance through work, and if your spouse's health insurance covers you even if you turn 65 and you have adequate coverage, you will not have to file for Medicare Part B. Sometimes Medicare Part A is kind of automatic at 65, and you might have to apply for that. Sometimes your employer or your spouse's employer's insurance is going to want you to file for the hospital insurance because that's already been paid for. So you may have to still file for Part A, but you would not have to file for Part B. You would just have to demonstrate and tell Medicare that you do not have to file for it. If you are collecting Social Security, they will automatically sign you up for both of those. So that's a little caution on that. So be aware. I want to talk about income-related monthly adjustments to your Medicare premiums, and I'll do that after our next break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We will be back in just a minute.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails. Discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. Thank you.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about odds and ends in financial planning, since it's hard to categorize these things when I want to talk about a bunch of different things in one show, so I'd call it odds and ends. Let me quickly talk about, since we kind of were talking briefly about Medicare premiums, some people who are already on Medicare may notice from time to time that their Medicare premium amounts change. You get a letter at the end of the year from Medicare telling you, hey, your Medicare premium, which is normally $135 a month, is now going to cost you $200-something a month. And you're like, what? What happened? Well, several years ago, legislation, I guess, came through to say if you have higher income, Medicare is allowed to adjust your participation rate in the cost of the Medicare insurance. So if you're higher income, depending on how much higher your income is, they can adjust your participation in the cost of the Medicare premiums. So Medicare is subsidizing some of the Medicare insurance premiums. You're paying $135 a month. They're paying, you know, some other amount that we don't know about. But if you're a higher income earner, your premium can get bumped up. It's called the income related monthly adjustment amount. You get a notice at the end of the year, and they tell you that for 2019, for example, the letter that just came out, for 2019, your monthly amount is adjusting because we saw on your 2017 tax return that your income, you know, was high above these thresholds. And so therefore, here's the monthly adjustment. Boom. They start taking it out of your Social Security. You thought, you know, your benefit was going to be $1,000 a month. And now it's $900 a month because they took out an extra $100 after, you know, the bump on the Medicare premium. So people have to be aware of that. Now, you may not be able to do anything about it. You might just be one of those fortunate people who has really high income, whether it's from, you know, retirement account distributions, pension income, maybe one spouse is still working, you have great investment income, and you might just be one of those lucky people who just always has high income, and that's just what it is. But you also might be one of those people that were working, And in 2017, you were working, you got severance, you got a big bonus, and your income was $300,000. But in 2018, maybe you're not working at all. You retired at the end of 2017. In 2018, you're not making any money anymore. And in 2019, all of a sudden, they're going to charge you these huge premium increases on your Medicare. You do have an option. There is a form you can fill out with Medicare that is called the Medicare Income Related Monthly Adjustment Amount Life Changing Event Form. It's an SSA-44. SSA for Social Security Administration -44. It's a form that you can complete to let the Social Security Administration know that you had a life-changing event. And that life-changing event might be that you retired, that they call it work stoppage, that you married, that you divorced, that you had a death of a spouse, that you had work reduction, loss of income-producing property, loss of pension income, employer settlement payment. So there are a number of life-changing events that could occur that you could let Social Security know, hey, don't base the adjustment on my 2017 income because that's not really real anymore. This is the reality and here are the new numbers. And they have a section where you indicate what the reduction in income is and for what tax year. Okay, so that's something to keep in mind. The other thing to keep in mind is if you're doing any kind of tax planning around this Medicare premiums. I have clients that were actually watching all the thresholds. The thresholds changed. So the 2018 tiers are very different than the 2017 tiers. So in, it used to be that if you were married and your page one income under $170,000, there is no adjustment. But if it goes from $170,000 to $214,000, it would go up. That's the same for 2018. No real change there. So if you're, they call it modified adjusted gross income, which is basically your page one income plus any tax exempt income, like tax exempt interest. If that total is more than $214,000, there is a bump in your premium. What changed are all the next tiers. So, and I'm just using married, filing, joint as my example. So then the next tier was 214 to 320, and now it's 214 to 267. Then it was 320 to 428. That next tier is now 267 to 320. Used to be up more than 428,000 is the most they're going to apply to your Medicare premium adjustment. And the 2018 tier is 320. So you're already at the top income at 320,000, what used to be 428. So we're going to have a lot more people subject to the income related monthly adjustment amount, and you heard it here. So if you had a life-changing event, know that you can complete this form, the SSA-44, to let them know, and they can get on that and change that for you. Maybe it's not going to be all the way down to the regular premium. Maybe you just dropped a tier or two. So either way, you can still get that. So life-changing event. The biggest life-changing event I see that impacts this is for people who retire. All right. So that's your Medicare income-related monthly adjustment amount. Watch for it. And you can also do planning around it. If you're someone who's doing Roth conversions or taking gains on your account, that kind of thing, that's what you want to be careful of impacting that as well. Using up your tax bracket is another odds and ends. You know, when I see people who have married, filing, joint, have $45,000 of taxable income, and the 12% tax bracket is up to about 77.4 is the 12% bracket. Well, if I have some capital gains, maybe I need to diversify on my portfolio and I haven't wanted to sell something because I didn't want to take the capital gains hit. Well, in that tax bracket, if I'm married, filing, joint, the capital gains tax rate is zero. So maybe this would be the time I would want to throw, you know, maybe sell something and reap some of those gains. That's part of rebalancing, right? Take some of the gains. That would be a great opportunity to do that. Sometimes people are don't have any taxable income, but maybe they have an IRA that they haven't had to take money out of. Maybe you want to do a conversion of IRA money to Roth. So you want to kind of watch those tax brackets, play those tax brackets. Sometimes people's circumstances change. Maybe you're going to get married and next year you're going to, you know, get a windfall with this new spouse. So maybe you want to do some tax planning for yourself this year, doing IRA contributions or things like that. Speaking of which, the contributions for 2019 did increase with inflation. So Jess from my office gave me those numbers tonight. New limits for 2019 for IRAs is $6,000 plus the $1,000 catch-up. And it was $5,500 for 2018 with the $1,000 catch-up if you're over 50. 401ks went from $18,500 to $19,000 with a $6,000 catch-up if you're 50 or older. So if you need to adjust your 401k contributions for 2019, you let your employer know. Maybe you can go online and do it. Some people do it by paper. Some people do it online. You could increase your contributions if you're one of those people who likes to maximize your contributions. So be aware of those new limits. Health savings accounts, just so you know, if for 2018 you have a health savings account, that means you had a high deductible health plan. You have a health savings account. Generally, you would do contributions to your health savings account through payroll deduction. Sometimes employers also put money into the health savings account. There's a maximum amount you can put in. If you did not do that through payroll deduction or through the employer, you may have an opportunity to catch it up and go to the maximum amount depending on what kind of plan you have. If you're single or if you have a family plan, there's different maxes. And if you're over 50, you can. There's a catch-up of like $1,000 as well. 2019, off the top of my head, I think the family plan for someone who's 50 or older can do up to like $7,900. If you're not doing that much between the employer piece and the employee piece through payroll deduction, and you don't get it done this year through payroll deduction, you still can fund it up to April 15th when your tax return is due, and get the deduction. And then instead of it being tax-free through your W-2, you would take that deduction on page one of your return. So if your payroll is doing it, you've already gotten the deduction. You don't take any other deduction. You can't double dip. But if you did not do it through payroll and in fact wrote a check out of your bank account and it was not done through payroll, then you could take the deduction for that piece on page one of the return. I had several people do fully fund their health savings accounts after before April 15th to make up for that. All right. So I hope these odds and ends have helped tonight. Let me see what other odds. And oh, I was going to talk briefly about the qualified business income. I mentioned that earlier. For people who are self-employed or have pass-through income, it might be Schedule C income, it might be partnership income, it might be S-Corp income. And it could also be rental income. If you have rental properties, there is going to be a big deduction that may be available to you in 2018, up to 20% of qualified business income. It depends on your filing status and how much other income you have on your return. It is not based on just your business income. It's based on your taxable income on your return. So, you know, if one spouse makes $400,000 and you make $20,000 in a business, you may not qualify for it depending on, you know, what kind of business you have and the calculations, et cetera. But if you're married filing joint, your income's under $315,000 and you have some self-employed income, some rental income, you may qualify for this qualified business income deduction, and it's up to 20% of that income. That will be a nice deduction for a lot of people. It's not a tax credit. It's not a deduction off your business income. It's not going to lower your income for self-employment tax calculations. Self-employment tax is Social Security tax, basically, that when you're self-employed, that's what we call it, self-employment tax. It doesn't lower it for those purposes. It's literally lowering your income. It's a 20% reduction for the qualified business income, 20% of the qualified business income. It's a deduction against income. All right. So be aware of that. Why is that important? Well, it may not be too late before year end to do a little planning to make sure that you're under those thresholds so that you qualify for the full deduction. All right. So you need to talk to your tax advisor about that and doing planning around that if you haven't already. And hopefully you have already. Next week, I'm looking for my notes here. Next week, we have, as I mentioned, Tim Roof and Connor Darrell, who are going to come on the show and talk about the markets and the economy, looking back and hopefully looking forward. So we're excited to have them on the show. I want to thank our listeners for calling in tonight. You had great questions. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate the ideas, too. It's always helpful for me. I've been doing this for, over 10 years. So coming up with ideas every week can sometimes be a challenge. So I really appreciate the listeners who call in and ask these great questions because it helps me think about new topics to talk about. So thank you, listeners, tonight. Lori, thanks for taking the questions tonight. Shandi, thanks for covering the board tonight. I always appreciate you guys both for being here. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.